Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. Today's episode of the podcast is another in our series of White is Good, actually, in Magic the Gathering, a series where I and some guest collaborators who I'm about to introduce, or reintroduce in this case, try to talk about some of the things that we feel white in Magic does really well to try to counteract or at least be able to try to deal with some of the negativity surrounding what white and especially mono white can or cannot specifically do in the EDH community. So without further ado, I'm going to reintroduce our recurring guests for today. And I'm going to be starting off again in opposite order of the time last week, so the correct order from the first episode, you know, just to be that way. I'm going to reintroduce Mono White Border, aka Peter. Hey Peter, how's it going today?
Going good, MJ. Excited for the weekend.
Yeah, aren't we all? It's also March Madness time, so if you're into basketball, that's another big thing for us too. And I'd also like to reintroduce our other collaborator. You may know him as Unsummoned Skull on Twitch, reintroducing J-Ro. Hey, J-Ro, how's it going today?
It's going pretty well, thanks. How are you?
It's going pretty well. You know, again, like Peter said, it's the weekend, and obviously we get to be doing this podcast as usual on Friday afternoons, and I just really enjoy being able to hang out with you guys and talk about white. Anyways, today's podcast episode is going to be regarding the Strixhaven teaser post on Tumblr that Mark Rosewater himself just dropped earlier today. And obviously, Strixhaven is the Wizarding School set, standard legal set that's coming out next month, and it's going to be based around five houses based on the two-color, somewhat like the Ravnica Guild pairings, but again, these are houses, not the guilds, so pick and choose kind of what is similar between those in the Ravnica guilds and what might be different. Anyway, obviously we're coming up on the spoiler season for Strixhaven that comes up next Thursday, I believe. And we did get a teaser from Morrow himself today that outlined some of the things we can expect from this upcoming set, as well as some specific creatures and even some legendary creatures that we'll be finding in the set. And we thought it'd be really interesting today to talk about some of the cards that, just from this specific teaser, we think might actually fall under White's color identity in the color pie, and just try to speculate on what some of those cards might be, and if they may be any good, or, you know, even in some cases, what we want to see out of these cards. So, without further ado, I'd like to go to the one piece on here that has everyone on the internet talking about this, and that is a white card with the rules text, in quotation marks, draw three cards, end quotation. Obviously, since a lot of the uproar about white and Magic the Gathering is that white, quote-unquote, cannot draw cards, this seems to kind of spit in the face of that logic. Obviously, the fact that white would have any specific card draw that says draw three cards on it is extremely powerful, but again, we don't know anything more about this than you draw three cards. Obviously, we do have Coveted Jewel, which is an artifact for six, which does the same thing, but again, unless this is going to be an artifact, I kind of have a feeling that we're going to be talking... Well, obviously, this is a white card, so it's not going to be quite the same. And, Peter, since this is definitely something you were interested in before, when we were talking about this stuff before the show, I want to hear your thoughts on what we might be seeing with this card specifically, and, if any, what caveats it might have for you, or potentially someone else drawing three cards off of this.
Yeah, the overwhelming response has really shown us how jaded the Magic community has become to any indication that, you know, the potential for mono white to draw three cards. Like, everyone's kind of, you know, preparing themselves for the letdown. There's no guarantee that this is a mono white card. It just says white card. That could mean that it's white black. It could mean that it's white red. All we know is that it's going to have a white pip in the mana cost, most likely, or it's going to have a white color identity. But it's more fun to work under the assumption that it's mono white, I think. So my initial kind of reaction was thinking of a variation on Happily Ever After, which was a three mana enchantment that entered the battlefield and drew everyone a card. And then we have Farsight Adept, which was a three mana creature that entered the battlefield and drew you and target opponent three cards. So my guess for this one is it's going to be an enchantment that when it enters the battlefield, it says you draw three cards and target opponent draws three cards. That's kind of my inclination, though the wording might be a little... So it doesn't say draws three cards. Otherwise, it'd say you and target opponent both draw three cards. Yeah, so that works. So yeah, that's my thought, is it's going to be you and target opponent both draw three cards, which in Commander, you know, has some interesting political interactions, because if it was every player draws three cards, that's kind of risky. But if it's just you and another opponent, you can, you know, choose an opponent who's behind or choose an opponent who's going to help you out in taking down, you know, the arch enemy or the top dog. So my, you know, obviously we don't know for sure what it's going to be, but my hopes are, I'm intrigued. I'm percolated by the possibility of something that could have some relevance. And if it's an enchantment, that means it's recurable. If it's on a creature, like, hopefully, I do hope it's on a body of some sort, either a creature, an enchantment, some sort of permanent, so that it becomes something that's recurable in white. If it's just an instant or a sorcery, it's going to be less impactful in a mono white deck, if it is even mono white.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you brought that up, because again, my example here being Coveted Jewel, since it is an artifact, the fact is that you can drop it in any deck, but especially in mono white, where you can use that card draw, and it becomes an interesting political tool, because obviously if someone hits you with it for some combat damage, then they take the card, they draw three, and then they have a mana rock. So the fact that whites could potentially have the ability to have some sort of recurrable card draw on here, and especially if it's a political tool, that would definitely be quite intriguing. I think white has been pushing here more recently towards either catching up or towards politics, and something like what you described right there would definitely fall under the latter category. So now I want to kick this over to you, J-Ro. What do you think about this card?
I think the draw three cards is going to be on the other side of the card, meaning that it's gonna the draw three cards will kick in after you put in some work or after something bad has happened. So, for example, I could see it as like maybe a 5 or 6 mana Oblivion Ring, some number of things. Maybe a 6 mana Oblivion Ring, 3 permanents, and a 3 non-land permanents. And then when this is put into a graveyard from play, you may draw 3 cards.
So something that requires additional input or setup, right?
Right, rather than just something to draw players' cards, such that it becomes difficult to determine whether you can even see it as card draw. Unfortunately, that's where I kind of see it fitting, because in my experience, white either has to work harder for straight-up card draw, or the cards that are used to put you up in cardboard aren't necessarily ones that you could consider to be card draw or advantageous. It's just something where you don't control it as much as you'd like to.
Mm-hmm. So something like, I know we've mentioned this on the show before, but something like Truce, which is an instant that allows everyone to either draw two cards or gain a lot of life. Well, that's a very symmetrical effect. You can't control what your opponents are going to do, but it does allow you to have that unquestioned card draw if you want to do that. So something more in that vein?
Yes, there are also some other cards like Inheritance, I believe. You pay mana for it, but that's, I think, just an old design. But it's something that draws you cards when bad stuff happens, so when a creature dies.
I think the likelihood that it's a conditional effect is pretty high as well. That's a good call. Just some sort of if clause. If this happens, mm-hmm. if you gain this much life, if you put in enough work, you can have this many cards.
Rather than, of course, like blue, which is just you pay this much mana, you get this many cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it sort of goes into that territory that I feel black really goes into, because you have a bunch of cards where, you know, if one of your creatures dies, draw a card, depending on a token. Nightshade Harvester, for instance. Or, sorry, mm-hmm. Harvester of Souls, my bad. Something like that, where obviously if a non-token creature dies, you draw a card. Or Kothafed, for me, when I'm playing my mono-black commander deck, where whenever something hits the graveyard from the battlefield permanent, I draw a card. Something like that that's very situational, requires that if clause.
I like that you're talking about bleeding into other colors, because that is a big thing that's going to happen when you have white bleeding into black, like it does in one of the houses on Strixhaven, then it makes sense that this might be a white card, but it might bleed into black a little bit, or it might bleed into red a little bit in terms of providing some temporary disadvantage.
But wouldn't red potentially be, especially with the way we've seen red and doing card draw, I feel like it might be more of an impulse style draw versus where black would definitely have you draw the card straight up. There may be, and obviously there's an additional cost, but black is okay with doing that. And as we have seen, there is a house that fits the what we know as the Orzhov Guild on Ravnica for Strixhaven. So it's entirely possible that this could be a white-black card as well.
Yes, what they haven't experimented with yet that they could is that red has a lot of card draw or card velocity that requires discard. They have not really done that with Exile. And that would be really interesting, given that they just printed Belborca, which mm-hmm. cares about things getting exiled. What if this was something like, was it the 2-mana red, discard 2, draw 3, drawing blanks on names of cards again.
Cathartic Reunion.
Yeah, Cathartic Reunion.
What if this was like Cathartic Reunion, but it exiles instead of you discarding, so it doesn't set up graveyard shenanigans, but it does set up Belborca?
That would definitely be an interesting way to definitely not only change how white would have access to card selection or more card advantage, but also would definitely make more of a sea change, I think, for not then red and then Boros specifically, if they were to do something more like that. I think then we'd be looking beyond just the boundaries of this one card, and we start looking at, would this be a new card advantage engine for these color pairings?
You could also look into some... So this is in blue right now. I'm just looking at my blue. So I have a mono blue Aristocrats deck that I recently made, sort of as an homage to MJ, because I think he's awesome. And this is a cool, interesting deck that's designed sort of how he builds them.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
But this is so Perilous Research is in there. Draw two cards and sacrifice a permanent. Now that's not really blue, and it's not really how people usually view blue. Hatching Plans, when it's put in a graveyard from play, draw three cards. Either of those could be ways to merge that sort of into white, because white does have things that sacrifice themselves or sacrifice permanence.
And we've seen that in the Lorehold Guild already on the command that they got. Sacrifice a permanent, draw two cards is on there, the Lorehold command.
Mm-hmm. I could see them doing something like putting Hatching Plans into white, because it's an enchantment, when it's sacrificed, draw three cards. And that would operate similarly to what I was thinking, where that would theoretically, as long as the converted mana cost is low enough, work with something like Sun Titan. It's a way to sacrifice an enchantment, and there aren't a lot of things that necessarily kill enchantments, so you'd have to work for it again, but it would get you a lot of card draw.
Yeah, my Saram deck takes a lot of advantage of sacrificing enchantments through something like Fate's Healer to get the enchantment back through Sun Titan or Hall of Heliod's Generosity or something like that. So if they printed a Hatching Plans in white, I'd be really ecstatic.
Yeah, definitely. The fact that we'd be able to open, or the fact that Wizards would be able to open up a very different avenue for white to be able to gain some sort of recursion or some sort of advantage would definitely be a nice respite from what we have or have not been getting the last couple years here, where it seems like in some cases white is kind of stagnated. But again, that's why we're doing this episode series, and that's why we're still excited about talking about this. So I wanted to kick this over to you again, Peter. I know you are kind of keeping the list of cards that you felt in this teaser feel white. Which was the next one on this list, at least of the one things we can expect, quote-unquote, that you believe would potentially fall under white slice of the color pie?
Right, so I kind of compiled my list around either things I've heard people suggest on various Discords or Twitter or something that could be white, or just effects that have the potential to be white. So the next one here is a Planeswalker you know, but not as you know them. And I've heard people suggest that perhaps we're going to see the Wanderer show up on Strixhaven again, and maybe they don't appear as the Wanderer, but we actually get what their identity is. That's one kind of thing that people are suggesting. The Wanderer is a pretty cool Planeswalker that's been popping up in arts on Ikoria and originally popped up in War of the Spark. But we don't really know anything about them. We don't know who they are or where they come from, so maybe they come from Strixhaven.
I feel like there's a lot of room for this one, though. I mean, it could be one of any number of Planeswalkers. Obviously, Wizards has a huge stable of them, and we know that the Kenrith twins are already going to be in the set. They've already been effectively revealed through the set art, or at least some of the background stuff. So I don't know. This one feels maybe like a stretch to me. I don't know. Obviously, you have a better pulse on this than I do, so it'd be really interesting to see the Wanderer come in here. Obviously, they had a very interesting ability on their War of the Spark card, the ability to exile something straight up, and obviously that is something that white does very well in its color pie. So I think something like that would be rather interesting to see if your hunch is correct.
Yeah, the problem with the Wanderer appearing on Strixhaven is, what would they do? I don't know how the Wanderer would translate to the feel of what we've received thus far from Strixhaven. So, yeah, probably not one we're going to get. And I don't know, Coach Jero, can you think of any other white Planeswalkers that might be traversing the multiverse and appearing on Strixhaven?
I think that there's the possibility that some Planeswalkers could, and one of the ones I'd like to see them delve further into is Teo the Shield Mage.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's a possibility since he is a mage, that there is the possibility there that he's learning different types of magic and that he could be there as a student.
He's very scholarly too, and he's a writer, correct? So Silver Quill, maybe?
Possibly. That would work.
I like that guess. That seems more plausible than the Wanderer to me.
Yeah, that I actually think
The Wanderer to me sounds like an ace in the hole they can pull at some point in time just to have them there to be there, I guess.
Right.
But this one seems like somebody who could have a legitimate reason for being there and who could undergo some amount of growth as a result.
I like the Teo guess. I definitely... that one intrigues me for sure.
Oh, yeah, it helps it just made one.
Yeah.
It works. It works for me, too. The first time we see him, he is a student, albeit fairly bad, what he's trying to do. But it would make sense to then be able to have him go into another scholarly environment and maybe unlock more of his potential, especially since he does already have access to the Spark. And he has... acquitted himself quite nicely in the story. Again, not going into some of the issues regarding the War of the Spark novels, but if we just look at the one specific character, he did show enough growth in those stories, and it would be interesting to follow his story from there.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, though, when they say a Planeswalker you know but not as you know them, maybe that's a character who has lost the Spark. I have to look at who was on D-Spark, but does losing the Spark kill them, or do they just become a normal character?
I mean, Teferi did lose his Spark, and he was doing just fine prior to the events of the Dominaria set, so I would assume someone could lose their Spark, but again, it's all gotten kind of muddled based on the War of the Spark novel and how that all worked out. So I'm honestly not sure.
Maybe they retcon something, but trying to remember who's on D Spark.
On D Spark, it's depicting what appears to be Liliana removing Bolas's spark.
Using, I believe, two of the three Eternals.
So Petra and Eternals.
Yeah.
So.
It's also a really good card, too. I mean, I'm not going to lie. That D-Spark is a very good instant.
Yeah, for sure. Garruk is traveling with Will. Is he still traveling with Will and Rowan?
I think that they helped him to remove the influence of the chain veil, but they did something else to him that was bad.
Oh, of course. Poor Garruk.
And there's still some, at least when we first heard about this, it's very possible that Kasmina will show up here as well, being a wizard that first showed up in the War of the Spark set also, which would definitely tie into the whole magic school thing here in blue.
Right, maybe Kasmina makes more sense than any white planeswalker.
Probably, but again, it's more fun, you know, on an episode where we're talking about white Magic the Gathering to dream a little bit. It would be very interesting to see Teo in a magical school trying to round out his and trying to more fully understand his powers. That would be actually quite interesting. I really enjoyed seeing Teo's story in the War of the Spark novel. It was one of the highlights for me, and it would definitely be interesting to see more from him in the future.
And I like that he's not necessarily bound to a particular area, so he makes thematic sense. He isn't really constricted to be anywhere, and he would theoretically undergo some solid growth.
So while we're probably wrong on this one, I would put my money down on Kasmina, honestly, but if we are going to be talking about Mono White Planeswalkers, Teo would be a very interesting option. Okay, Peter.
I'd like to see them both.
Oh, definitely. The more the merrier. If we could get five planeswalkers, that'd be pretty awesome too.
Mm-hmm.
One for each color. Anyway, so what's next on your list there, Peter? So we've talked about the white card with the rules text draw three cards, and we've talked about the planeswalker you know, but not as you know them. What was the next one on the list that really stood out to you as potentially being a white card from Morrow's Tumblr post?
All right, so the next one is the introduction of a new evergreen keyword. So an evergreen keyword is something like vigilance, flying, or prowess that can appear in, and usually does appear in every set. And there's no reason it couldn't be that a white ability or something normally thought of as a white ability would be made into evergreen. So I don't know if you guys have any ideas. The idea I was able to come up with feels like a little bit of a stretch, but in white, I thought they could possibly, you know, usually once a set, we have a white card that says exile target blank creature enchantment, whatever, until it leaves the battlefield. And so perhaps they could keyword that to just be banish, a la banishing light or banisher priest. But it feels like a little bit of a stretch. They don't normally keyword enters the battlefield triggers. So, or they don't have an evergreen keyword that is an enter the battlefield trigger. So I don't know if you guys had any other ideas of an evergreen keyword that...
I have an idea. And I think that it relates to the future shifted card as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we can segue into that one, but...
Yeah.
I think the future shifted card... So there's a couple ideas I have for the future shifted card. I'm just going to go with one of them and can go to the other one after. One of the future shifted cards I think could go in is a blue one, Spin Into Myth. It says specifically in a premiere set. It doesn't say at all. So Spin Into Myth was printed in Conspiracy. There's a possibility that... Since Conspiracy is an ancillary set and not a premier set, like Lorwyn or Dark Ascension or Future Sight, and since it was an ancillary product, that it could be the card that's talked about that way. Spin Into Myth put target creature on top of its owner's library than Fate Seal 2. And Fate Seal, I think, is what could be the new thing, because it operates similarly to Scry. So to Fate Seal, you look at the top card of an opponent's library, then put any number of them in the bottom of the library, and the rest on top in any order. It functions similarly to Scry, except in this case it's slightly more of a multiplayer ability or a controlling ability. I think Fate Seal is a distinct possibility, and it was on a future shifted card that hasn't been in a premier set.
Yeah, I like that idea. It's because I think it's key that whatever word they make evergreen has to be something that has already happened but has never been made into an evergreen keyword.
Something like mill.
Yeah, mill is a good example, or prowess was in cons, and then after cons block, they were like, hey, we're going to make this an evergreen keyword because it played so well. So Fate Seal would fit it would fit that description of we played with Fate Seal. People are familiar with it, so we're going to make it evergreen now. The only downside is I think that they've said before that Fate Seal was not a fun play experience. I don't think it fits in. Whatever you think of the Fire philosophy, I don't think it fits into the Fire philosophy. But it's certainly an interesting guess and pairs well into the other hint of a future site card.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be cool with some white Fate Seal cards.
Yeah.
but to segue in here, the future shifted card was the next one on my list.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. Morrow said a future shifted card appearing for the first time in a premiere set other than Future Sight. So this one's a really easy one to figure out if a white card could possibly meet these conditions. Jero, you said that in the pre-show that you might have a white card that could work into this set.
I do. One more thing about the previous item, so in terms of Fate Seal, there have also been a number of products created recently that have blue featured and that do a lot of top deck manipulation. And so that's another reason why I'm starting to think that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the other card that I'm thinking of in terms of, one that is future shifted that hasn't appeared in a main set, is Patrician Scorn. Patrician Scorn costs 3 colorless and a white. It's an instant. If you played another white spell this turn, you may cast Patrician Scorn without paying its mana cost. Destroy all enchantments. It is interesting that this was printed at Common in the in Future Sight, because you normally wouldn't think of a Destroy All Enchantments effect that common. It does require you double spelling, otherwise it costs 4. And it's an instant, which means it's actually kind of difficult to play without its cost on someone else's turn. But it does amplify the spells that you're doing. It gets them to work well together. It sort of creates a mini combo. And it influences how you build your deck. And I could see those things being involved in a Spell Slinger set, if that's what they do try to make out of this. And an interesting way of introducing newer players to the concept of timing and sequencing.
I think another thing that really backs up this guess is the recent frequency of caring about casting 2 spells in a turn. Eldraine, mm-hmm. there was a blue-red archetype. In M21, we had the green creature who made a cat token if you cast 2 spells. And then we've had the white-black in Kaldheim care about casting 2 spells. So this plays very nicely into that continued theme of we want to cast 2 spells each turn. And if they did make a white hatching plans, that would be a really cool combo in Limited.
Oh, yeah. And they have been working on Limited combos with, like, the Ox and the Plow.
Right.
I didn't play a lot of Kaldheim Limited, but the Ox and the Plow, I remember being the centerpiece of blue-based decks, or white-based decks.
It would also kind of play, it would end up playing, if they did do that, like a Cathartic Reunion, very similar. Essentially, you're discarding two cards to draw three cards.
Yeah.
You're actually getting card advantage because Cathartic Reunion, you're spending three to get three, but this one, you're essentially discarding two to get three, so it would kind of play into that Cathartic Reunion feel you were talking about.
And it has very much to do with timing, sequencing, and sorts of things that you'd expect would influence deck building decisions. So creating those core synergies rather than having inherently powerful cards, which seems like something that would come out of a Spellslinger set or really just an Academy-based set, because it's an important lesson to learn.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so what's next on our list? So we've talked about four different things. Again, the white card, the Planeswalker, Future Shift a card, and the new Evergreen keyword. What's next?
All right, so now in my list of cards that could possibly, or hints that could possibly lead to a white card, we've covered kind of some typing stuff that Mauro talked about, but these are direct quotes from a card. So the first one is the text appearing on the card is, otherwise, put a study counter on it. And so the reason I think that this could possibly be a white card is because we already have a white card with a study counter on it in Pursuit of Knowledge, which is also a white card draw, believe it or not. So Pursuit of Knowledge is three and a white for an enchantment. You can skip skip drawing a card to put a study counter on Pursuit of Knowledge. Then you remove three study counters from Pursuit of Knowledge, sacrifice Pursuit of Knowledge to draw seven cards. So you skip three draws, and you can draw seven if Pursuit of Knowledge sticks around. But it would kind of be an interesting callback to this study counter card if they decided to go that route in, you know, the Academy theme set.
What if they just made a cheaper version of it for three cards? Maybe.
I'd be in for that.
Yeah, so currently the study counter has only been utilized on two cards. The one Peter just mentioned, Pursuit of Knowledge, as well as Grimoire of the Dead, which seems to be an artifact for four. Seems to be more of something mono black is going to do, because you are getting black zombies out of your graveyard. But I do agree with Peter on this one that it does make a lot of sense that we would be seeing study counters on Strixhaven, because not only is it a magical school, but the fact that the Lorehold school or college itself seems to be based upon study and knowledge, which is not something that the red-white color pairing has really been known for in the past. But if they are going to be putting a new spin on that specific color pairing, I feel like that would actually be the best place for this sort of card with a study counter on it. And so I definitely agree with you, Peter. I do believe that this would probably be something where, even if it's not mono-white, it certainly will have a mono-white identity to it.
And it goes back to what J-Ro was talking about. In white, you're jumping through hoops. So they've decided that they want white to be able to draw cards, but they still probably make white work harder than any other color to do so. And the otherwise in this text, otherwise put a study counter on it, sounds like you have some sort of hoop to jump through in order to do whatever you're trying to do. Which study, draw cards, kind of makes sense in that vein.
Because obviously you're trying to get some sort of payoff later for taking those counters off, whether that's on the Grimoire of the Dead, for instance, where you're removing the study counters to get your creatures back from the graveyard, Pursuit of Knowledge, where you're sacrificing, you've taken your time, you've sacrificed the card, and you're able to get a reward, which is much greater. I mean, let's be honest here, seven cards in mono white, that's a big deal. You've had to give up several cards previously, but you're hoping that the payoff is going to be fine later because you're more knowledge. You feel more inspired after you've studied. So you're right. I think this does feel like a very flavorful win. Just it's really going to depend on what the other condition is where you're not putting a study counter on the card.
All right, and the next one is, this one also is going to be a little bit of a stretch, so bear with me. Whenever a permanent entering the battlefield caused a triggered ability to trigger. So that's the text. It's giving us the condition, but not what the result is.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I think this is a white card, it's very Panharmonicon-esque. We've also seen a similar text on Yarok, but the reason I think it could be a white card this time is because it says permanent. And white tends to stay permanent a lot. Now, so does green, so it could, and we've seen this in green a lot more frequently, so could definitely be a green card, but I think the use of the word permanent, you know, gives an outside chance that it could be white. I don't know if you guys can think of any white cards that care about just permanence entering the battlefield.
I can, but not in the way that you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I can see this as more of a stacks card.
Right, that's a good idea. So
I can see it being something like when a permanent entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability to trigger, that ability does not trigger.
Right. Or
prevent that ability from triggering unless the owner does something.
Pays one or something. I mean, blue does that too.
Mm-hmm. And Morrow does love subverting expectations with these, so I think that's a really good line of thinking there, J-Ro.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a chance that this is actually a white card, which...
Like, I can also see that as a way to print something in standard that they think will impact other formats. Because this would theoretically turn off, like, Field of the Dead, Valakut. Because it says a permanent.
It'd even throw things like Thrag Tusk, or back in the day, something like Siege Rhino. It would just shut those off completely, mm-hmm. if we're right in this assumption.
Purphoros. That's a lot of very impactful cards, especially in older formats.
And it would be cool to see a Hushwing Griff or Hushbringer-like effect that isn't operating the same way. It's not completely shutting down the ETB, but possibly just causing you to be punished for that ETB, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could be potentially quite dangerous on our format, depending on how good that ability is. Because something we as EDH players really enjoy are Enter the Battlefield effects, and messing with those would not be the most popular within the community, I would think.
It's also interesting that goes against a lot of white abilities with things like Blink and Bounce and such. But it also is a way that white would check white.
Mm-hmm. And I have a white deck that runs Hushwing Griff, Hushbringer, Tikatli Honor Guard all in the same deck. And it just mm-hmm. chooses to not fight on that axis. Instead, it kind of warps the rules of the game a little bit and uses what it knows a lot of people in the format are doing against them. So now you're, you know, 5-mana 2/2 with a really good ETB effect is just a 5-mana 2/2 instead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's creatures in all colors that have ETBs, but I feel like this could also be something where blue also really loves to blink and flicker things too. And giving white the ability to finally say, no, you cannot do this, would actually be quite useful, especially if you're running mono white and you're not... You're already down to blue in a lot of other ways. Having the ability to be able to take one of what we feel the more hallmarky type bits of blue away from it would definitely be what I would consider a hallmark of white.
All right, so if we're ready for the next one.
Yep.
The next one is also sounds a little bit staxy, so buckle your seatbelts. What appears on the card is, whenever an opponent activates an ability that isn't a mana ability, which we've seen this type of effect on things like Harsh Mentor or Runic Armisor. I'm having trouble thinking of a white card that does this effect, but it does. The fact that it's such a staxy kind of effect, or sounds like a staxy effect, is what kind of makes me think that it could be white. Maybe they're trying to delve into that space, and maybe my guess would be, could it be whenever an opponent activates an ability that isn't a mana ability, draw a card, in line with what Gavin was talking about earlier this year of giving more tax draw effects to white, or effects that draw a card based on what your opponents are doing to white, in the same vein as Mangara.
And white does have the ability to be able to turn off most activated abilities. You have things like Faith's Fetters, Arrest, enchantments that do not exile a creature like Oblivion Ring, but which do effectively prevent them from attacking, blocking, and activating activated abilities. Linvala, Keeper of Silence, in my regular play group that I play with every week, we have a player who loves running all of these kinds of abilities. It's very annoying, but yeah, I can't say it's not useful. It's made me play more triggered abilities because of that.
Right, and you also have things like Stony Silence that would also apply there, but the thing is normally white completely stops those abilities, so it's still playing to the staxy nature of white without it being, with it being a tax card more so instead of a stax card. It's not, it's letting you do what you want to do, it's just coming with a cost, which, from my experience, Commander players are a lot more friendly towards tax effects than they are to stax effects. So perhaps, you know, getting a rare card that draws a card every time your opponent activates something would be a good use of a rare slot, which is something that people are always hyper-vigilant of in new sets.
Sure. So, Jairo, what do you think on this topic?
I think... I could see being put on a permanent and influencing a number of counters being put on it. Maybe more study counters. I'm wondering how many cards there are going to be that have activated abilities other than combat abilities, and how defensive of a set this would make it. Like, are there going to be Merfolk Looter type cards or Rummager Goblin type cards that are going to tap? And if so, are those going to be put on defensive oriented creatures? So that's an interesting thing to think about in terms of the set for a card like this to be relevant. Or is this just going to be one of the rares that get thrown in that do very little and that you really hate to see in a draft pack?
And that's the inclination I get, is my guess would be whatever color this comes in, it's going to be on a rare card and you're not going to be happy to open it for your limited deck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All but right. I also see untap each creature you control, then tap any number of creatures you control, which most likely is going to be in blue because Twiddle effects are in. But when you untap creatures, so things that untap creatures or effects that want your creatures to be tapped, it seems interesting to think about it that way, that there may be stacks oriented cards that are not stacks in that they are preventing the thing from happening, but stacks in that they are rewarding you for them doing something similar to like Smothering Tithe. Unfortunately, it might also wind up being blue because I think there was a recent card that's actually being played in CEDH that when an opponent taps a creature, if it's not for a mana ability, you draw a card. Drawing a blank on which one that is, but I think it might have been from
Veridity War Circle or something. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Verity Circle, yeah.
Right.
So this could wind up being a blue card.
Right.
Verity Circle, yeah.
That's why I didn't put it in my list, is because it just sounded so blue. But I would... White is like secondary in tapping stuff. There's a lot of white cards that'll tap your opponent's creatures. And there's a lot of white cards that will untap your creatures so that you can do a surprise defense. I think Two Arms does that. All right, if we're ready for the next one.
Yep, go ahead.
All right, now these are the final category that Mauro gave us, were creature types. So there's quite a few here. I picked out two of the different creature types he combined that I think could be a white card. The first one was Bird Warlock, and the second one was Spirit Dwarf. And both of those, so Spirit Dwarf for sure sounds like a mono white card to me, because spirits and dwarves are both very firmly in the white section of the color pie. And then Bird Warlock. Warlock we haven't seen in white yet, but we have seen birds in white going back to the days of Onslaught Box, so that's why I put both of those in the category.
And I do definitely agree with you on this one, Peter. They actually do feel like white cards to me as well. I feel like Bird Warlock would probably be a white-blue card, something like Kanji Skywarden that just came out in Commander Legends, which cares about flying creatures. I feel like you're going to very likely get the blue aspect out of the Warlock and probably white out of the birds, so it just makes sense to me that you'd probably be able to have some kind of interplay there. Although, now that I think about it, since we don't have a school pairing for the Azorius color pairing, I don't know how that would play out. So we'll see on that one. And the Spirit Dwarf, you're right, that definitely sounds like a mono-white creature to me.
I disagree on the Bird Warlock. The Warlocks tend to have patrons, especially if they're using the D&D logic, because they're going to be going to a D&D-centered plane relatively soon. I think Warlocks are more likely to be in red or black. I could see the Bird Warlock being maybe
Do you think Silver red. Quill, potentially?
I think Bird Warlock would be blue-red. If they're going to take, so Prismari, if they're going to take a more draconic lineage, otherwise, maybe black-white, but I see black-white as being more based on insight and knowledge in this one, sort of closer to the way the blue would play, and I don't see it in that either. And it certainly wouldn't be green-black, so I think they're going to lean into the red part of it more than the black part.
So here's my off-the-wall guess, and it's funny that you said it's definitely not green-black. My off-the-wall guess is, what if it is green-black, and the Bird Warlock is supposed to be reminding us of, like, a Plague Doctor or something like that?
Mm-hmm. I could see that, especially if they make it a flightless bird.
Right.
Because we're assuming that it's like an Aven. And they haven't done a flightless bird.
Right, because normally birds have wings, but if they did an art that, you know, closed off the wings or put the wings under, you know, kind of a Plague Doctor like very heavy black coat, maybe they could get away with it. That's my off the wall guess.
Mm-hmm. Just thinking of, like, it could be an ostrich. That would be kind of funky. See a Plague Doctor ostrich.
Mm-hmm. It would fit with the territory, though.
Mm-hmm. And you know that I would call it Dr. Ostriches. I feel like Dr. Octopus. Doc Ob.
What about the Spirit Dwarf, J-Ro? Do you agree with Peter and I that sounds probably like a white card, or do you think this would potentially go in a different college?
I think that it would have white in it. I have a feeling that for these two-type things, for quite a lot of them, they're going to wind up being two-color.
Sure,
like Troll Druid, I'm pretty sure that's going to be green-black. Turtle Druid sounds like green-blue, things like that. Bird Warlock, I think, sounds like blue-red. I think the Spirit Dwarf is probably going to be red-white. I think that's kind of clear from how they're making it, because the dwarf part's red, and they just made a bunch of red dwarves who were also a little bit white, too. And pretty much every time they've appeared, dwarves have been red and white.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm pretty sure they have. Yeah, just mm-hmm. in terms of history, I'm pretty sure they have. Even on Kaladesh, they're red and white. So it makes sense for it to be red and white again. It would be interesting if they push Spirit in a different direction, because spirits have also meant ghosts, and so you've seen some black spirits or some blue spirits. But it's possible it could be black white,
The
but
flavor of Lorehold, though, just, with it being kind of an ancestor or somebody from the past to look back on and learn from, makes it. I could definitely see it as a trope of like it's kind of like a teacher, maybe. I guess it's not a legendary creature, so they probably wouldn't do that, but maybe it's like your teacher for today is a ghost of a dwarf from this time period who's going to teach you
Yeah,
about it.
as much as we don't want to go into Harry Potter stuff, there was a ghost teacher and there's also a dwarf teacher, so maybe.
And it definitely fits along with what we know the Boros now has, which is Belborca being a legendary creature and being a spirit warrior. I feel like it would
Right.
definitely fit in the same vein there.
Interesting. So I was thinking that it being a spirit meant black because that would be the goat, there would be usually ghosts. But I could see spirit meaning ghost and learning from the past as a red white. And that is a lot of what they do in the world. They are a lot based on history, learning from the past, archaeology. What if in their archaeological dig they happened upon a ghost? That could happen.
Yeah, I do agree on this one. We could easily see this going into Silver Quill as well with the white and black. So very likely it'll go into one of those two directions. But I kind of want to tend with Peter on this one. I kind of want to think that it'd be cool to see a red white spirit dwarf having something to do with Lorehold. I think that would be quite interesting. So what do we got next?
That is everything on my list that I think has at least a fighting chance of being white.
All right, so it sounds like it's time for the lightning round. Effectively, we're just gonna go take turns and talk for maybe 30 seconds about some of the other cards on the list that or at least it's cards that were teased on in this Tumblr post, and just talk about what really excites us about them for, just a little bit. Obviously, we're not gonna write a whole soliloquy on this. We don't really have the time. We don't really know much about these cards, but we're gonna see what we like and if we agree with that or if we don't agree, it's always interesting just to hear the discussion. So, Jairo, which one of these cards specifically that we haven't talked about today do you feel like really interests you?
I'll repeat this process six more times. I like seeing hex variants and the six being an important number. So hex destroy six permanents, I believe. Or sac you sacrifice six permanents, something like that. So I like the idea of repeating a process six times and seeing how that works with the occult on this plane.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Peter, what's up for you?
I am super excited for another World Championship card. Paulo Vitor Dama de Rosa is going to appear on a card similar to Javier Dominguez. And I love seeing pro players' likenesses on cards, so I'm excited to see what card he gets.
Especially since we all like Sad Robot and that it started out as a World Championship crowned card. So, my interesting one here, at least the first one that I want to talk about, is the new legendary artifact creature, which is a construct. Obviously, if you've been listening to my show lately, I like talking about my Karn Silver Golem deck. And while I don't know for sure that this would be a colorless legend, if it was, that'd be really exciting because we are definitely lacking for options in mono colorless in EDH. And the fact that some sort of construct could potentially be used as a legendary command, sorry, as a legendary creature and as a commander is very intriguing to me, and also just kind of fits in the whole concept of having moving metallic parts that could still be sentient and still be involved in the college in some way. And I feel like with as awesome as Karn has been in the lore, that would be really interesting. Definitely something to keep an eye on going forward. All right, Jairo, is there a second thing you think is really interesting on this list that we haven't already talked about today?
Yes, and before we go on from the previous point, I could see the legendary artifact creature being like Bosh and having a color identity even though it's colorless. Kind of colorless. So I could see that being true of Lorehold if it has like Boros abilities on it, even though it appears to be colorless. I don't want to get your hopes up on that.
Hey, I can dream, can't I? That way
Oh, yeah.
that way, if we ever get mono colorless pod to fire, we can actually have four different legendary artifact creatures without having to go mono Eldrazi. I think that's kind of the big key here.
Gotta turn that dagger, don't you? Anyways,
it's all right. It will fire eventually. We just got to make sure everyone's good to go. But hey, Karn's ready to go whenever. Just let me know.
Each mode must target a different player. This is one that interests me for multiplayer type formats. So I'm interested in seeing how that functions. And what modes they wind up giving, but I like the idea of cards that function better in multiplayer than they do in single player.
Yeah, and we have had a history of modal cards as well, so it'll be interesting to see how this kind of concept can be used while targeting different players, and if it's going to be positive, it's a more political card, or if it's going to be all negative, something more like Cryptic Command. I don't know. We'll see. All right, Peter, what's number two for you?
I know a lot of people out there are going to be excited for this creature type, including Tyler at Bitboard Gamer on Twitter, but there's going to be a creature type Turtle Druid. And as someone who just built a D&D character that is a turtle who lives out in the forest, he's not a druid, unfortunately, but he is a turtle. I'm really excited to see more turtles in Magic and turtles that are humanoid.
Just to go Turtle Shaman.
And the second one that I'm really interested in looking at is I do have roots in Golgari, so I'm very interested in seeing what Witherbloom has going for it. And I feel like the card with the text, search your library and graveyard for up to four creature cards with different names, definitely sounds like the kind of graveyard synergies that I would love playing with. Obviously, this is probably something we've seen abilities of where you get, I think it's Boneyard Parley, I think, was the card I'm thinking of here, where you pick X number of cards out of your graveyard, and an opponent chooses how many of them go to your hand. I can't remember if it's to your hand or to the battlefield, and the rest go back in your graveyard. But it's just definitely something that sounds like a very interesting graveyard strategy, and definitely a way you could potentially recur some extremely big beaters and do some pretty silly things. Just being able to pull them out of the bin for extra value. So we'll see on that one. And is there anything else before we wrap up for today that we really want to talk about? Anything that really stands out?
I like the cycle of enemy dual lands finishing off a 10-card cycle. I'm hoping it's the cycling lands.
Mm-hmm.
Cycling dual lands that were started... I don't know. But they keep... they've been pushing cycling a lot recently. And I could see that being an important thing to set up other archetypes and other formats.
Yeah, because cycling is definitely a very good ability, especially when it's stuck in your hand. You can't use it late in the game. It's always nice to be able to throw one of those things in the bin and be able to get some extra value off it. Peter, anything else you want to go over before we quit?
No, I'm in the same boat as J-Row. I want to see those enemy fixers to just... The enemy fixing has always been kind of the most difficult. So it'll be nice just to get that little extra boost.
Yep, definitely sounds good. And I guess I'm curious about this iBat creature. We've had eyes, we've had bats before in our game. Obviously not a lot on either one. Most of the bats in the game are rather terrible. But it would be very interesting to see how an eye mixed with a bat... Just what exactly would that look like on a Magic the Gathering card? And would it have interesting abilities? And how I feel like this definitely fits into Silver Quill, actually. I'm not sure why, but it feels like a white-black card for me because it feels like a very Orzhov-type thing to have some kind of weird Thrall-type monstrosity. I don't know. It just feels like a Silver Quill card to me, although it could easily fall under Witherbloom as well. So I'm just really interested in seeing how that is pulled off, although it's probably going to be a common, so it's probably not going to be the greatest card of all time.
It's Metabat from Yu-Gi-Oh! One of the OG cards.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about that. All right. I want to thank you guys for taking the time to talk with me about this today. It's been great, as always.
Absolutely. It's an honor.
Thanks, right.
MJ. Yeah. So, J-Row, where can people find you on the internet?
So I have a a Twitch where I stream Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m., same skull time, same skull channel. twitch.tv/unsummonedskull. I have the Skull Symbol Discord, which is an LFG server, and now it's just become a wonderful community on Discord. And on Twitter, at coach_J_RO.
And again, I know I've mentioned this before, but I cannot vouch for J-Ro's Discord enough. It is a great place to just meet new people, find some games, whether or not you're playing on the stream games at the same Skull Time, Skull channel. Sorry, I always seem to mix that up. But if you want to play stream games or if you don't want to play stream games, it's completely fine. There's a great community out there, a lot of great people. All three of us are on there. So yeah, if you're interested in something like that, definitely let J-Ro know. And Peter, where can people find you on the internet?
As always, I am at Mono Whiteboarder on Twitter, and you can peruse my blog, monowhiteboarder.weebly.com.
All right, sounds good. And you can find me on Twitter at MTGInQuarantine. You know you'll found the right spot when you found a giant comic-looking Ulamog wearing headphones, stuck in a bubble, giving you the rock-on symbol. You know it's me. And you can also find the back catalog of the White is Good Actually in MTG episodes that we've done in the past, as well as my entire back catalog on Spotify, Google Casts, Apple Podcasts, and wherever fine podcasts are found. And just a quick housekeeping item, I will post the link to the Tumblr post that Mauro made earlier today to the show notes here in case you're interested in looking more at that. And we're obviously very excited to see where Strixhaven goes, what kind of ground it starts trying to push, especially for me, for Lorehold. And I guess I'm just really excited to see where they're able to take the set and if they're able to do something completely different. Obviously, we want to see how White does. We may not get our wishes in a lot of ways, or at least the community may not get all of its wishes. But if they're able to start breaking some new ground, I know that I'll be happy. So for J-Ro, for Peter, and for myself, my name's MJ. You've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. Have a great rest of your day.